Right, so equally important to doing the forensic work on the vapes that people have used to get when they got sick is looking at other people who have used similar products who may not have gotten sick. So to see if there's, and I strongly suspect that there's a temperature relationship there. If you're using it very hot, you're likely having a more good problem than if you're using it less hot. It's just a gut feeling. So have you looked at any of those things? Is there a common brand associated with this? Is there common devices associated with those, or is it all across the board?
We received a myriad of different products now. It's hard to really discern a product because oftentimes we're receiving unlabeled cartridges of unknown origin. And so in order to discern origin, they're going back to the users and asking them where they obtain their products. And much of the time they obtain them from what has been called informal sources. So it's when you traditionally think of a product, when we're talking about things that are coming through informal means, they're not going to have the same kind of quality control that a regular product would have. As far as the devices, we have also received devices from consumers. We don't always know what device they use, and our focus is we're all analytical chemists, and so we haven't done any testing of the devices because that's really outside of the scope of the work that we do at the Forensic Chemistry Center.
Yeah, understood. But it might be interesting even to identify what the device is and see if there's any correlation, because some devices will be operating at much higher temperatures than other devices. We've heard people that are recommending temperatures above 400 degrees Celsius, which to me is a degree of insanity with some of these things, given the fact that most things break down to 300. The temperature piece would be something that's interesting.
Okay.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Is that something that's done in tandem with WEAC, the testing of the device itself?
Some of the devices were transferred to WEAC, but I don't have any information about what they may have done.
And that's complementary to what goes on at the Forensic Chemistry Center. The Winchester Engineering and Analytical Center is another specialty laboratory.
Yes.
You reported a wide range of observation between 0 to 78% of the THC. I'm wondering, did you consider possible degradation of the THC leading to possible underestimation, or depending on the method, if there are coelution of other components, maybe overestimation of the THC? I understand your intent is different for the forensic purposes, but is the method published? Is it something that did consider these potential for degradation?
Yes. So what we did for the quantitation of Delta 9 THC is we have both a GCMS and an HPL UV method that are used in concert with each other. And so using GCMS, we can characterize all of the cannabinoids that are present. And then we would couple that data with HPLC UV, where we are looking at UV spectra also for peak purity. And so I've only presented data for Delta 9 THC, but in cases where we had other cannabinoids that were present at 0.5% or higher in the product, we quantitated those as well.
Sounds very good, yes. Do you have those methods published, or are you adapting some of the published methods?
So that what we used was an internal house method that we already had in development when this project started.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Yeah, did you do any work to correlate the heavy metals with the components inside the devices, or can you say categorically that it was definitely coming from those components? Or perhaps was it in the liquid before the liquids were in the devices?
So all we received was a used product. And so in some cases we had the cartridge that it was in, but we didn't know what device was used with that cartridge, because oftentimes we didn't receive devices and we didn't have samples of the liquid prior to filling the cartridge. So what we were concerning ourselves with is what the patient in this case would have been exposed to. And so that's really all I can speak to, is what we found in the liquids that we tested.
Okay. I mean, is there any plans to actually correlate those heavy metals with the components inside the vaping devices? Because there's a lot of information in the public domain that that sometimes brass is used and you get high copper. Obviously, high lead would probably infer that the battery terminals were soldered. I just wondered if there's been any effort to kind of correlate that information.
Well, we haven't done anything to destroy any of the cartridges that we received, because these are all still patient-associated samples. And so if we tried to go in and, like, analyze the cartridge itself for metals or do rinsing or anything like that, that would destroy that cartridge for future testing.
Okay.
And so we haven't done that yet.
You understand.
Is it considered an inert cartridge, or is that just, I mean, are the cartridges inert and immune to the effects of external heating or interactions, or is that an assumption?
I don't think we can assume that. There is exposed metal that the liquid is exposed to during the vaping process, so it is entirely possible.
So there is a metal component. I have absolutely no idea and they are interchangeable. You can reload the cartridges into a device for continued use, or is it one use set?
Well, there are many different configurations of the cartridges. Some are refillable and some aren't. Any other questions?
So with the, you know, your THC range is like quite wide, so you're right in the acetate ranges, and the story you're told is that it was cutting agents that would make the product look like it was still pretty high potency, right? Like people would, in the black market, you'd look at your cart, and if it ran too fast, it was dilute, so it wasn't like a pure extract or a pure crude extract.
Okay.
So did you see that when the vitamin E acetate levels were, when the THC levels were what you might expect from like crude extract or a distillate of THC, that there wasn't much vitamin E acetate? So those, I think, what your highest numbers were in the high 70s or something. Was there vitamin E acetate in those highest potency products? Like, so people usually, they cut their distillate to get it to the right consistency, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so when people do that and they cut it too far, they dilute it too far, you can tell because it runs too loosely in your cart. And you're like, oh, that's garbage because it's been cut too much. So then they would cut with these things like Honeycut, but in the acetate, it would run at the same, had the same consistency as a THC distillate or a THC extract, CO2 extract. So it'd be like a way around this like eyeball test of the potency. So you'd like put a high potency number on the label, but you're actually 30%. You say you're 60 or whatever. So do you see that correlation with your data?
I don't have that data. We didn't do any measurements of the viscosity, and oftentimes didn't run very well.
Not the viscosity data, but like the vitamin E acetate with the THC amount. Because when the THC amount's high, you expect it's uncut.
Yes,
you know what I mean?
I understand what you're saying. Like I said, most of the samples that contained vitamin E acetate, it was about 50%. And so then, of course, that would correlate to a lower level of delta-9 THC. But I don't have those specific numbers in front of me. We did see some products that were very high in delta-9 THC, certainly, and some that were very low.
And those ones contain vitamin E acetate.
I don't recall offhand what the highest concentration THC product was that also contained vitamin E acetate.
And then with the lower THC ones, one thing we noticed when I was still in a testing lab in the private sector, and Chris presented it as well, was these THC isomers. And sometimes the peaks for these isomers was greater than the THC peak. And we'd send those results back to our clients, and they'd be like, no way, this still gets me as high as an 80% product. And you sum these two peaks together, you'd be like, hey, yeah, it's about 80% of the product. And,
sure.
And it might be these THC isomers that are also quite psychoactive.
So we did see some products that have very high levels of THCA, very high levels of delta-8 THC. Of course, those weren't included in the numbers for delta-9 THC, but in cases where there was a cannabinoid that was above 0.5%, we did quantitate that also.
Interesting. Thank you.
Well, thank you very much.